embark upon our last session for this glorious weekend. Tonight, we're going to teach you how to see Krishna in the authorized way. We're going to teach you how to see Krishna from far off, how to see Krishna from medium distance, and how to see Krishna up close. Now, we want you to bear in mind an example given by the Acharyas, the great transcendental professors of Krishna consciousness. This is a very appropriate example for driving around here. When you see a mountain from far off, you just see a dark mass ahead on the road. You don't see any distinct characteristics. You just see up ahead is this dark thing. As you get closer, however, as you get closer to the mountain, then you see the mountain has form. It has shape. It's not just a dark mass up ahead, but you actually see the mountain's contours. Then when you get right up close to the mountain, you see all the varieties on the mountain. You see trees, houses, people walking around, cars driving. So you are looking at the same mountain, but from three different vantage points. So that same mountain has three different visions according to how close you are. Similarly, Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has three looks, so to speak, according to how close you are. Now, when you think about it, you also do sort of the same thing in your tiny, limited way. Some people only know you in a most general, generic way. Others know more about you. And your close friends and relatives know all the details of your personal life. So the same little you is seen in different ways by different people according to how well they know you. Someone may just refer to you as that man, or that Australian man, or that Indian man. That doesn't show very much knowledge, but it's something. It's not wrong, conventionally speaking. And then as they know you better, as they get closer, they may say, that civil engineer, or that cookery school student. And those who know you very well, your dearmost companions, they understand all the details of your private life. The same person, seen in different ways. So, Krishna is the unlimited person. And he can be known according to three visions, depending on how close you are to him. We're going to hear a verse from Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna describes what happens to those who don't take the trouble in this life to know him. Now, everything has its positive and negative results. Here in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, that is the chapter title, Krishna is going to explain that if you ignore him, or if you don't, if you're not attentive in the bhakti laboratory, you're just doing it in a casual way, superficial way, ritualistic way, you won't get the proper result. You have to be very focused and attentive. So you see all around you the verification that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like you know, those of you who are students, some persons studying are very casual. They don't pay so much attention, even though they're in the classroom. Others are very diligent students who are soaking up every word the teacher says. And then there's some are in between. So in this verse from the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about those who are very lackluster or very ineffective in their application of Krishna consciousness. They're not taking seriously all the opportunities and insights available to them in the bhakti laboratory. Let's hear from Lord Krishna. Ashradhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Translation. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. In other words, it's not that you can ignore Lord Krishna and live happily ever after. It's an optional thing whether you're trying to understand Krishna or not. It is optional in the sense that you have another choice, but you'll get the reactions of your other choice. That is Krishna's point. He's saying, aprapyamam, not attaining me, you'll get something though. Because you may say, okay, so we don't obtain Krishna. We don't get Krishna. Big deal. Life goes on. Well, that's true. But how does life go on? Mrityu samsara vartmani. You return to the path of birth and death in the material world. So in that way, life goes on, if that's what you want. Now, when Krishna talks about those who are not faithful in devotional service, he doesn't mean faith as is ordinarily understood. Belief. No. He's not speaking about that. He's speaking about faith, or the lack of faith, in terms of the complete understanding that simply by executing bhakti yoga, all purposes will be served. You'll get that conviction, you'll get that experience when you attentively enter the bhakti laboratory. But if you're not paying attention, or if you don't care, then you can't remain fixed on the path of bhakti, and you will not attain Krishna. That is the point. It's not that he's saying, those who don't believe in me, they return to the path of repeated birth and death. He's saying those who, even though they're shown the evidence of bhakti, they see the laboratory results, but they just don't care. They're very lazy or they're very inattentive. Then such persons get a result. They return to the path of repeated birth and death. So you should understand your options. It is not a casual thing, whether I understand Krishna or not. Actually, it is obligatory. You are required. But if you don't choose Krishna, then automatically you're choosing. Let me rotate in the cycle of repeated birth and death. If you've been made aware of all the experiences available to you in the bhakti laboratory, and you don't take it seriously. That's nice, but I have so many other things to do. And then you will slip. You'll not take advantage of this greatest jewel. And Krishna says you'll return to repeated birth and death in the material world. Think about your options. So many of you are concerned. What should I do now that I'm in Australia? A few of you are thinking, should I go back to India? My family's in India. Most of you are thinking, how to stay in Australia? So you're weighing your options. So here, Krishna's presenting with options to you. You attain Krishna, you go to the supreme destination. You ignore Krishna, you return to birth and death in the material world. Now, as promised, we're going to talk about the three looks of Krishna according to how close you are to Krishna. First, we're going to begin with the all-pervading spiritual energy. New Age type persons are very fascinated by this. And some of you have said, yes, you have heard of Brahman, the all-pervading spiritual presence. Actually, Brahman is the impersonal presence of the Lord. His energies are spread everywhere. But that doesn't mean Krishna is spread out everywhere. Like you take some kind of paste and you spread it. No, Krishna's personality is always intact, but he's present everywhere by his energies. So that all-pervading energetic presence of the Lord is called Brahman. So, if all you think is that matter is important and nothing else exists, you'll dismiss all this Vedic scientific information. You'll just say, what are all these folk tales? What is all this mythology? Who needs it? I'll read to you from the most prolific author in the 20th century. That was the science writer Isaac Asimov. Any of you read his books? No. Oh, one. Any others? Two. Okay. He wrote more books than anyone in the 20th century. So, he wrote over 200 books. And he charged that sentimental people will always glorify ancient sages as the original knowers of theories that modern scientists have only recently come to by their painstaking research. So this writer, Isaac Asimov, he was very angry about this. People give so much credit to the sages, to the mystics, who supposedly with their eyes closed and their intuitions working, figure out things that scientists have to go through so many decades of exhaustive research to understand. Now listen to his complaint. Whatever conclusions scientists arrive at concerning anything, it always is possible to quote some item in Eastern speculation that sounds the same. The implication, then, is that scientists are foolishly wasting a lot of money and effort in finding out what those clever Eastern sages knew all along. For instance, there are exactly three things that might be happening to the universe in the long run. The universe may be unchanging, and therefore neither have a beginning nor an end. Or two, the universe may be changing progressively, in one direction only, and have a distinct beginning and a different end. Or three, the universe may be changing cyclically, back and forth, and therefore ends at the beginning and starts over. So, he says, all the sages who have speculated on the universe must have come up with one of these three alternatives. At present, scientists accept the second alternative, that the universe is moving in one direction only. It has a distinct beginning and a different end. However, he says, the value of science is not the particular conclusions it comes to, because conclusions, he claims, are sharply limited in number. And guesswork will get you the so-called right answer. But what is the value of science is its methodology, the system it uses to arrive at those conclusions. So you understand, he's saying, when you think of the universe, there's only a limited amount of conclusions you can come to. He says, basically, there are three. So you might say, well, the sages, they came to these three conclusions long ago. Who needs scientific research? So he's complaining that Although it's true that there's only limited conclusions you can come to about the universe, scientists prove these things, whereas the sages just give you belief. He says, 100 sages, though speaking so wisely, can never offer you anything more persuasive than believe. Whereas science offers you proof. Now, if you've been listening attentively this weekend, you understand that we are talking not about belief. We are talking about the processes of bhakti. We are encouraging you to enter into the bhakti laboratory and leave belief far behind. We're not trying to encourage you to take up traditional rituals and customs that no one knows the meaning of. We are encouraging you to take Krishna's instructions and apply them in your life. You will experience the results. Therefore, there's such extraordinary power, inconceivable power in Krishna consciousness. I could feel it when you were all chanting, singing. I could feel such potential. The potential in this room can change all of Melbourne. Just those you who are gathered in this room. If you properly honor your potential in Krishna consciousness, you can do amazing things. I remember, maybe, when did we start doing these programs? How many years ago? 5 years. Very small. So small. And now, look. This is because of the power of Krishna consciousness, the power of the soul in its connection to the Supreme Soul. So, materialists can't acknowledge, they can't admit that there is bhakti science and that there are techniques available to experience the Vedic conclusions. They think we're just having faith, we're just believing. They think that only material science has methods of verification. So therefore, we want to make sure you understand. We're inviting you into the world of the Krishna Conscious Laboratory. Now, when you talk about Brahman, you're talking about a conscious energy that pervades the universe. The Vedic literature describes that everywhere, from the subatomic level to the cosmic level, you'll find Brahman. In the Upanishads, there are so many statements describing how Brahman is all-pervading, limitless. Most people, they don't know exactly what Brahman means. The Vedas tell us that Brahman is not subject to material analysis. And what is the evidence of Brahman being everywhere? Consciousness. Consciousness cannot be materially dissected because consciousness is the symptom of Brahman, that there's an all-pervading spiritual energy. Many of the 20th century's greatest physicists, or at least some of them, were very enchanted by Brahman. They found something mystical in it, that there's an all-pervading, undifferentiated spiritual energy from which everything comes from. Now, according to the Vedic texts, Brahman is beyond the perception of the senses, and it has no material qualities or characteristics. It can't be described materially. It's beyond the cause and effect of the material cosmos. Brahman is eternal, limitless, beginningless, immutable, and unchanging. So what is matter in relation to Brahman? Matter is the shadowy manifestation of Brahman. Just like there's daytime, which depends on sunlight, and then there are shadows. So, when you talk about Brahman, you have not reached at all the highest level of understanding Krishna. You are actually dealing with a very preliminary phase. But people often become very attracted to this concept that there is an all-pervading spiritual energy. And In fact, they often cannot distinguish between the individual spirit soul and the supreme spirit soul. They think ultimately there's just one spiritual energy and we are it and it is us. They can't understand that there is what is described in the Vedic text very clearly, Brahman and Parabrahman. There is the all-pervading spiritual energy, and then there is Parabrahman, the supreme Brahman, the source of the all-pervading spiritual energy. So, you may run into Western people who think that they know the Vedas, they know Vedic knowledge, and they like to recite catchy phrases that they've ripped out from the Upanishads. We are all it. It is all us. You are Brahman. We are all the supreme. That's their conclusion. We are all God. We are all the supreme. And they think that the Vedas are talking in this way. This is not true. What the Upanishads are doing, they're offering you a preliminary vision of Krishna. Try to understand that there is all-pervading spiritual energy. You're looking at the mountain from far off. All you see is a dark mass up ahead. You don't see anything more than that. It's the preliminary. It's just the beginning. But many people have a misunderstanding that this Brahman realization is the ultimate. Even if you study Hinduism at a university, you'll find in most universities that they have the idea that everything that comes out of India is monistic, impersonal. And that the goal of life is to annihilate your identity and finish off your individuality and just merge with the oneness. They think anything that comes out of India has that goal. But this is not true at all. This propaganda is everywhere, that Vedic knowledge is impersonal. Ultimately, everything is formless, without personality, without variety. No, this is not the conclusion of the Vedic literatures. They are simply, if they refer to that, are describing something that is very preliminary. You're seeing, remember, you're seeing the mountain from far off. It's just a dark mass up ahead. You can't see more than that. You're not very close at all. You have to make further progress. You'll hear a person saying, since we are all Brahman, that means we are all one. We are limitless. We are all pervading. We're the infinite. This is crazy. You have the same quality as Brahman, but you're limited. You're tiny. Just like a particle of gold has the same quality as the gold mine. But you can't say that because you have a gold earring that you have all the gold in the mine. So when we become more advanced in Vedic knowledge, we can discriminate that although everything has the same spiritual quality, all living entities and Krishna also have the same spiritual quality, but there's a unlimited difference in quantity. So why do the Vedas describe Brahman then, if it so much confusion apparently has resulted? It's just to attract us away from attachment to matter. Our main hang-up is the acceptance of matter as the all-in-all. So at least when you hear about Brahman, you'll accept the existence of a conscious spiritual reality that is eternally beyond matter. That's an improvement. But it's not very much of an improvement, as we'll hear later. So, many people find this description, the Vedic descriptions of Brahman, to be so fascinating, when actually, from the Vedic point of view, they're considered quite elementary, quite preliminary. We need to understand the complete presentation of Vedic knowledge. That is, although you have the same quality as Krishna, just like the drop of ocean water has the same quality as the ocean, still, when it comes to quantity, there's an unlimited difference between the drop and the ocean, between you and Krishna. Sometimes the Vedic texts, especially the Upanishads, are talking about quality, and sometimes they're talking about quantity. But people like to forget the quantity discussions and just focus on the quality. Oh, I'm the same as God. Oh, this is great. I knew it all along. I know some famous, or shall we say infamous, swamis in India. And they just come right out and say, I am God, you are God. The only difference between us is I can remember I am God and you have forgotten you're God. And then, naturally, comes the conclusion. If you enroll in my courses, then I'll can teach you that I'll help you remember you're God. Now, if you're God, why do you need to be helped to remember that you're God? How have you forgotten that if you're God, how have you forgotten your godhood? But anyway, they will help you to remember your God for a nice fee. So people fall for this. Yes, all over India you'll find people who get captured by this. They look like they're very powerful sadhus wearing saffron, long beard. We are all it. It is us. The Upanishads say everything is Brahman. Sarvam kalpidam Brahman. They quote Sanskrit. People, ooh, sadhu, sadhu. Ooh. They say strange words like beyond all the individuality, beyond all the gods, beyond Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, there's just the the all-pervading oneness, no variety. This is nowhere said in the Vedic literature. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says quite clearly, Mataprataram nanyat kinjit asti dananjaya. There's nothing beyond me. When Krishna says there's nothing beyond him, that means nothing. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, it is the ultimate. That is the Vedic conclusion. All right. Now, once you lose your fascination thinking that matter is the all-in-all, and you progress to the preliminary stage of self-realization, Brahman, you should be aware of what comes next. What comes next is super consciousness, or the super soul. After you move past Brahman, you can try to understand Paramatma realization. Instead of the first level, remember, which is impersonal spiritual oneness, the second level is understanding the super soul in every heart and in every atom. Or said another way, in every microcosmic or macrocosmic structural unit. That is the intermediate level. Krishna talks about this in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayeshu Arjuna tishtati. I am seated in everyone's heart and directing the wanderings of all the living entities. The living entities are on a machine made of the material energy, and I'm directing their wanderings as the super soul. So this is intermediate realization. And finally, we're going to speak about the last level of seeing Krishna, which is seeing Bhagavan Krishna, the all-attractive, supreme, infinite person. So remember, these views of the same absolute truth, they're known in Sanskrit as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. You're looking at the same Krishna in three different ways. But what is the conclusion that you're getting this weekend? You're getting Bhagavan realization. We're presenting you the last word, the final conclusion. Krishna as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're not troubling you so much with Brahman, Paramatma. We're going right to Bhagavan realization. That is the power of the Hare Krishna mantra. You're on an express train to the last stop. But normally it takes many, many bursts before you get to the last stop, Bhagavan realization. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bahunam Jamanamante Ganavam Mam Prapadyante Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurlaba. Krishna says, after many births and deaths, you finally come to the conclusion that Krishna is everything. After many births and deaths. Now you're being directly presented with what is the last word in Vedic knowledge. So you have such a special opportunity. So, there are many forms of mystic yoga for getting in touch with the super soul in your heart. You have to be in a solitary place. You have to control your mind and senses. You have to practice controlling the breathing. And then finally, your mind quiets down, your vision purifies, and you actually can be aware of the Supreme Lord in your heart, in the core of your being. Now, how is it that the unlimited can reside within the limited? How is it that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be within you, the limited? We must accept that because the unlimited has unlimited possibilities, that means he can even exist in the limited. Otherwise, he wouldn't be unlimited. So Krishna, as the super soul, Paramatma, can be in the core of your being, even though he is unlimited and you are limited. And what is he doing in your heart? He is watching, and he is reminding you of your desires from your past life. You are so tiny, you can't remember what you wanted from your past life. But Krishna reminds you. Just see how helpless you are and how dependent on the super soul you are. Your most precious desires, you can't remember when you change the body, when you die and take birth again. But Krishna, as the Lord in your heart, he reminds you. You wanted this in your past life. You wanted to go to Australia in your past life. We are so dependent on the Lord in the heart, even for our material activities. What to speak of our spiritual activities? Now, how does the Lord in the heart help the devotees? He helps the devotees to forget their material desires and remember him. Everyone has their desires fulfilled by the super soul. The materialists want to forget all about Krishna and remember their material desires. So the super soul helps them. He'll guide you according to what you want. And that way you have full choice, full opportunity to choose. Just like, if you don't want to understand Krishna, from within your heart, Krishna will tell you, don't go to that place this weekend. Stay away. You'll find out about me. You don't want that. He's in your heart. He knows what you want. And if you want to understand real knowledge, if you're becoming weary of struggling for material happiness, you know, manufacturing plans for material happiness, then Krishna from within your heart will advise you, you should go. You should get on the bus. You think you're so powerful, but actually you're completely dependent on the super soul in the heart for reminding you what you want. In other words, you can't even remember what you want. Krishna has to remind you. You want to be a materialist. I'll help you forget me. Or you want to be a devotee, a bhakta. I'll help you forget your material desires and remember me. All this is dependent on the super soul. So, an example given in the Vedic knowledge is of two birds on the same tree. The body is like a tree, and the birds, one bird is you, the individual soul, the other bird is the supreme soul. So, you are the bird that's eating the fruit of the tree. You're trying to enjoy the body. But the super soul is the witnessing bird. He's not enjoying the tree of the body. Krishna, as the super soul, knows better than to enjoy material nature. He's watching you trying to enjoy. He's witnessing all your futile attempts, and therefore he's giving you the reactions. So, when you see the super soul in everyone's heart, you can understand how everyone is equal. You respect all living entities because you see, no matter what kind of body they have, the super soul is there equally. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, Pandita Samadarshanaha. One who is actually a pundit, a sage, sees all living entities as equal. Whether they're a dog, dog eater, brahmana, whatever, they're all having the super soul in the heart. So, this is the intermediate stage of seeing Krishna. But it's not the last word. What is the last word in seeing Krishna? Bhagavan realization. That means understanding Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. This is the most confidential knowledge. Not that God is the creator, maintainer, destroyer. No, God is the supreme enjoyer. The very thing that you want to do and fail at, Krishna does with unlimited perfection. What does Krishna do? He simply enjoys. He doesn't work. He's not personally involved in the creation of the material world, or the maintenance of the material world, or the destruction of the material world. Krishna simply enjoys with his pure devotees. That's all. That is God. Mm-hmm. Now, once we can properly understand the finite soul and the infinite soul, then we can hear about Bhagavan, the supreme enjoyer, the supreme opulent one. And those sages who understand Bhagavan are considered by Vedic culture to be the most exalted. You here are getting the opportunity for this most exalted position to understand Bhagavan, Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. This is the last stop in your spiritual evolution. Krishna consciousness, Bhagavan realization. Once you understand Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme enjoyer, automatically you understand Brahman and Paramatma. Automatically you experience Brahman and Paramatma. So these other two aspects are not separate from Bhagavan. They culminate in Bhagavan. They're present within him. So when you are connecting to Krishna through bhakti yoga, you're automatically dealing with Brahman and Paramatma. All the three phases are there, united as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You want to get up close and see the Supreme Enjoyer. That's a more advanced vision than just seeing Brahman, which is like seeing the mountain from far away, or Paramatma, seeing the mountain closer. No, you want to see all the variety, all the individuality. That is Bhagavan realization, the last word in spiritual science. So, why is it that some of you feel uncomfortable about the Supreme Absolute Truth having personality and individuality? You feel uncomfortable because you're thinking anything that has personality and individuality has to be limited. But that is just your speculation. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, describe personality and individuality without limitation. It's just that you're only familiar with material personality, material individuality. That's all that's there in your experience. But Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam will introduce you to the reality of non-material personality, non-material individuality. In fact, unlimited personality, unlimited individuality. That is the reality of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, you'll think, oh, you're talking about Krishna. You mean someone who's bigger than me, a person who's just bigger than me, a person who's just more powerful than me. No. Krishna is not just a bigger version of you. Krishna has no limitation. How can you conceive of that? A person, an individual who has no limitation. You can conceive of it with your tiny brain, but through the processes of bhakti yoga, you can experience that person. When you please Krishna through bhakti yoga, Krishna reveals himself to you. He lets you see him. So even though your senses are tiny, and on your own, you can experience what is God. When you please the Supreme Lord through devotion, he shows you himself. This is the express train. Otherwise, what are you going to do with your tiny brain? Try to speculate, what is God? What is Bhagavan? No, better you perform activities that will cause Krishna to reveal himself to you. Here I am. So all the activities that will make Krishna obvious to you or reveal himself to you are described in the Vedic texts. Therefore, you're invited to enter the bhakti laboratory and become introduced to Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Enjoyer. This is the last word in spiritual understanding. Once you understand this Bhagavan principle, you'll understand Krishna. And especially Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam teach about knowledge of Krishna. What does Krishna mean? The all-attractive reservoir of transcendental pleasure. Therefore, this weekend, we want you to remember that I have been officially introduced to Krishna in the authorized way. I've been handed the keys to the bhakti laboratory. I've been given the chance to go far beyond religious belief, religious ritual, and religious tradition. I can actually experience the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Krishna, and I can understand his preliminary phases as Brahman, as Paramatma. All this you're getting this weekend. Please take it seriously. Please try to understand how important your human form of life is. It gives you the developed consciousness by which you can understand this most elevated spiritual knowledge. And the more you progress in understanding Krishna, the more you'll be eligible to understand the spiritual world. You see, just like the material body has its homeland, the material world, similarly the spirit soul has its home, the spiritual world. There you exist with Krishna in a perfect relationship of pure love. Now, when we talk about Krishna, the Supreme Enjoyer, please understand, Krishna has form, he has qualities, he has activities, but they're completely spiritual. There's not a touch of matter. How are you going to experience pure spiritual form, qualities, and activities? You have to be trained by the processes of bhakti. Otherwise, you have no access to this kind of realm. That's why material senses cannot lead you to understanding or perceiving. Material senses cannot lead you to perceive the soul or the supreme soul. You have to rely on other methods. And those methods are given in Bhagavad Gita. Not faith, but practice. You hear what Krishna says, apply your senses, and you'll get the experience. That's what we're trying to teach you this weekend. as you become more knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness, we'll be able to tell you more about the activities of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna. And your heart will derive endless satisfaction hearing about Krishna. Your intelligence will be satisfied. So we're very happy to welcome you to your entrance into the world of consciousness of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All right. Last questions.
I do not understand what exactly is Paramatma. You said Brahman is equal to like a mountain that you see from far off. That really understand
Paramatma. Paramatma is when you get closer to the mountain and you see the form of the mountain. You're aware of the Supreme Person situated in everyone's heart and in every atom. But you haven't gone to the conclusion yet. You're not aware of Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. You see, Paramatma or Supersoul is an expansion of Krishna in everyone's heart, in every atom. But it's not that Krishna is simply in your heart and in every atom and that's all. No, he has his own pleasure abode and his own pleasurable activities. What you're trying to do in your material life is to imitate Krishna. You want your own pleasure abode, yes? Your pleasurable associates? You're imitating Krishna. He has all that in his unlimited spiritual world. But there are no material bodies in the spiritual world. All the forms are pure spiritual. All the forms in the spiritual world are composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And what is your body composed of? Ignorance, misery, temporariness. Those are your bodily constituents. Mm-hmm. In Sanskrit, asat, achit, and nirananda. Asat means temporary. Achit means ignorance. Nirananda, no pleasure. Those are the ingredients of the body. And in what are the constituents? What composes the spiritual forms in the spiritual world? Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So the techniques of bhakti yoga ultimately take you to the Satchitananda realm of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Only then can there be real pleasure. Now, the reason why you feel such satisfaction from this weekend is that you are getting entrance to the realm of eternity, knowledge, and bliss even while you're within the material world. That is how powerful the techniques of bhakti yoga are. Anything else? Yes.
It is written in the Bhagavad Gita that every millennium, the beings come out of Krishna and then eventually, when the millennium is over, they go back into Krishna. So when we come out of Krishna and eventually we go back into Krishna, we are a manifestation of Krishna only.
Your parts, like sparks coming out of the fire. You're not the whole fire though.
Yes, and but when our realization gets deeper, when our realization of Krishna gets deeper, then we start realizing, the realization comes from within, that we are part of Krishna and that everybody else is also a part of Krishna, and in that you see that we are the human being.
Why do you have to wait for the realization to come from somewhere within? Krishna is saying that in Bhagavad Gita. Why not read Bhagavad Gita? It's quicker. Huh? What's wrong with reading?
It's coming from...
Krishna is speaking to you in Bhagavad Gita. What's wrong with that? No, I don't want to. I can't accept this. It's only Krishna speaking in a book. How can you discriminate between Krishna speaking in a book and Krishna speaking in someone's heart? It's the same thing.
Like it's the difference between knowledge and realization.
If you take Bhagavad Gita and you say, Krishna is speaking to me, that is perfect. Why make things so complicated? Just like if I say, this is Krishnagraj, or if I write it in a book, this is Krishnagraj. What's the difference? The book is recorded sound vibration. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining himself to you. He's saying, Ishvar Sarva Bhutanam, I'm in everyone's heart. You take it, and you have perfect knowledge. Mamayavamsho Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. All living entities are my parts and parcels. Krishna says that. You take it. You have perfect knowledge. Isn't that the easy way? Otherwise, here's what you can do. If you want to try for Paramatma realization, super soul realization, stop your job, close down your business, go to the Himalayas, and find a lonely mountaintop and stay there through all the changing weather, cold, summer, and just meditate on the Lord in the heart. Are you ready to do that? Then better you read Bhagavad Gita. There's one, not that he is like this, he is very nice, up and coming devotee of Krishna. But there are always many persons in this world. You ask them to touch their nose, and what will they do? Why not just go like that? No, no, that is too simple. You take what Krishna says directly, apply it in your life, you get the results. Anything else?
What's self-realization? How is the relationship with the enlightenment?
Enlightenment means you can see. You can see the self as pure spirit soul, not the body or mind. But that's just the beginning. Then you have to understand the supreme soul. You have to understand Krishna. That is complete enlightenment. So first you understand your spirit soul, you're not the body. Then you understand the supreme soul, you understand Bhagavan Krishna. Then your enlightenment is complete. Yes, someone in the back? Yeah.
Could you please tell us a bit more about karma?
Karma. That is explained by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, that every action has a reaction. Just like if you are driving too fast on the highway, there can be a reaction, some accident. You're driving faster than you should, there's a reaction. Similarly, there are laws for living in this world. And if you disobey them, even though you don't know about them, you get a karmic reaction. You can say, oh, I'm just coming to Australia. I don't know all the laws. I didn't know. Still, you'll get punished. Similarly, you may not know about the laws of karma, but the reaction will be there. In other words, it's your responsibility to know the laws of Australia now that you're living here. Similarly, it's your responsibility to know the laws of nature because you're living in the material world. You've got to find out the laws. So many of you are studying accounting. You're aware of the GST laws, this, that, the other thing. What about the laws of the cosmos? Where do you study that? So Krishna is teaching you in Bhagavad Gita. Your body is a karmic reaction. According to your activities in your past life, you get a certain kind of body in this life. And packed into that body already is all the happiness and distress you're going to get in this life. You can't increase it or decrease it by material methods. But if you take to Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, all your karmic reactions are transformed. That's why at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Prachaja, Mame Kam Sharanam Bhaja. Just come to me. Just accept my program. And I'll protect you from all your karmic reactions. Don't fear. Isn't that a good deal? So you please take advantage. Just like some of you were telling me how you have jobs where you're serving meat or you're having something to do with meat. Yes, this is bad karma. There are reactions for that because knowingly or unknowingly, you're participating in the conspiracy of animal slaughter. Just like when there's a murder of a human being, everyone who is connected to that murder can be charged, can be accused. The person who drives the getaway car, the person who hides the murderer, the person who helps plan the murder. So many people can be implicated. Similarly, in terms of animal slaughter, so many persons share in the bad karma. Obviously, the one who kills gets the worst karmic reaction, the one who cuts the animal's throat. But also, those who transport the meat, those who sell the meat or pack the meat, those who cook the meat, they all get a share of the karmic reaction. That's why there are big wars every once in a while. And millions of people are killed because they have these slaughterhouses that kill millions of animals. What is the Sanskrit word for meat? Who knows? Mamsa. What does that mean? Me. It means I am eating you, and in the next life you'll eat me. Mamsa. Just the very word lets you know what's going on. I'm so lusty for tasting blood and flesh, I'll eat you in this life, and I don't mind that in the next life, you'll eat me to balance everything. This is karma. But there's not simply karma for slaughter of animals. There's karma for every activity in the material world except bhakti activities. That's why the food we served you here this weekend is karma-free food. And just by your hearing about Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna, your past karmas are being erased. All these things are going on just by your coming here this weekend. That's why you feel relief by being here. You feel purified, cleansed. Anything else?
Does this mean that workers and butchers get more punishment? Because saying like he's killing more animals. He's going to get more punishment.
The advice for a butcher is don't live and don't die. Why? Don't live, because the longer the butcher lives, the more horrible karmic reactions he accumulates for himself because of his butchering. And don't die, because as soon as he dies, all those horrible reactions are going to hit him. So the best advice for a butcher is don't live, don't die.
And then what kind of person actually fights for his rights and kills somebody?
Self-defense. That is self-defense. Self-defense is self-defense. It is not the same as you unnecessarily killing someone. Even if you're in the army and you kill on the order of your general, it's the general who gets most of the karmic reaction, not you. You get something.
But then he's fighting for his motherland. He's fighting for something.
Whose land?
Where he's born.
So what that you're born there? Big deal.
Don't we have any responsibility to our land?
What land?
Like our motherland, where we were born, where we grew up, where we had a childhood, where we have some responsibility.
But now you're in Australia.
Australian citizen.
But you want to be, yes? No, you'll leave. No. What's going to happen? You're going to school here?
No.
You're just visiting.
I go to college, but...
Then you're going to leave, yes?
This is all...
Wait, no. Understand my point. After you finish school, what happens?
PR.
So then this becomes your motherland.
That's something everybody thinks about, because then we get some rights here and then the living becomes cheap. We have to pay back the loans of what...
I understand.
So that this is all irrelevant. What I want to ask is that...
No, it's not irrelevant. My point is you can easily change lands where you live.
So you don't belong anywhere?
Your body belongs to a particular land, but you are the spirit soul. You're part of Krishna.
And as you said that Krishna helps us with whatever choices we make. Like if he tells us inside that, oh, you don't go because you don't want to be there. This is because what we feel. Is it that way? So if like a criminal feels like he wants to kill somebody, then is it that he gets motivated by Krishna to kill somebody?
But that person who's killed is getting their karmic reaction. They killed someone before, so they're getting their just reaction.
But that's fine, but is he getting the motivation from somebody?
You can't do anything without Krishna in the heart sanctioning. But that doesn't mean Krishna gets the blame. You get the blame because it's your desire. In other words, Krishna gives you the rope and you can either lift yourself up or you hang yourself with it. Don't blame Krishna that he gave you the rope. You're the one who hung yourself. You could have lifted yourself up with it, but instead you chose to hang yourself.
And like the igloo people who live in the Arctic, they don't have anything to eat except for the fish. So are they too willing they can't?
Wait a minute. I go to the Arctic Circle every year. We have a temple there. Yes, we have a Krishna conscious temple in the Arctic Circle. And they have nice prasad.
Consider a situation where to survive you have to have something that is non-vegetarian.
Have you ever been in that situation?
See, don't actually get it all on me.
You're speaking.
So I want to know something from you. I'm pushing back so I don't know something.
But I am telling you, have you ever been in a situation? Okay. It rarely happens to anyone. But if you are in that situation where there's nothing else to eat, then you can. But that is a special situation. But why you worry about that?
I'm not worried about
that. Then why you ask? You're not worried, you don't ask.
Maybe I'll never be in that situation, okay? But
better you try to understand what you should do now in a situation where you can choose what to eat, okay? Be concerned with practically what you should do now.
See, there are some questions which always rise in your mind.
God, I...
Not that they concern you all the time, but then if I felt something, I ask you. That's
very good. But try to understand my humble point to you. You should be most concerned with your situation right now. All right? That is most important for your well-being. So I am simply looking out for your well-being and reminding you of this point. Okay? That's actually care. All right? Thank you. Yes? Hare Krishna. You've been reading about Karma Yoga? Where? Okay.
Reading about Karma Yoga because Krishna is saying to Arjuna, like, if you do Karma Yoga, it is much more powerful than Bhakti Yoga because to through Bhakti Yoga you have to take so many births to reach to me. Is that so?
Which Bhagavad Gita are you reading? Which one?
Gita Press.
No wonder, confusion. Yes. Please, can someone help him to a genuine Bhagavad Gita? Please. Immediately you get a genuine copy, Bhagavad Gita as it is, instead of Bhagavad Gita as we would like it to be. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Bhaktyamam abhijanati. Only by bhakti can I be understood. Finished.
Lord Krishna is also saying to Arjuna that do your karma and you'll be free from all the results.
No. He says, karmani eva dakaras te. He says, you're entitled to do your duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of your actions. Everyone forgets the second half, you know? Krishna says, do your duty. But Krishna also says in the same verse, you should not be attached to the results of your duty. Just do it for the sake of doing it. Okay?
Doesn't that mean like do it for me and then forget about the reaction? But if you are doing it for yourself, then you are getting the reactions of that particular karma.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about two different types of duty. Ordinary varnashram dharma duty, social duties. And then he's talking about personal duties in relationship to him. Bhagavad Gita is a very beautiful symphony. And therefore you must get an authorized version of Bhagavad Gita, otherwise you'll be confused. Yes?
I would ask that the person who does not know about Krishna consciousness before, who has done some bad karmic, when he enters into Krishna consciousness, what happened to his the previous actions? Does he get more punishment or he gets in the limit?
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masuchai. He says, don't worry, I'll take care of your karmic reactions because you've come to me. So that's what you should do. You should go to Krishna. You do what he says. He says, sarva dharmam prachaja. Abandon, give up all varieties of your self-concocted duties and obligations and responsibilities and just do what I say. I'll take care of your karmic reactions. Isn't that a good deal? But what is our react? What do we say? But no, I give up all my concocted duties? No. I'm so busy. How can I give these things up? And therefore we go through one birth after another in this world before we finally take what Krishna says seriously. Yes.
If somebody really sincerely wants to continue on this path of self-realization or self-realization, and then but the responsibility towards the material world, maybe a relationship, duties, and responsibilities is dragging him away. So how to control, how to balance?
We need advice how to perform bhakti in this world. Arjuna, he also had his obligations and duties, yes? He's a military man. He's a family man. Therefore, Krishna says, if you want to know how to perform bhakti in this world, you should accept guidance. Study under an expert. Otherwise, it's true. Life in this world, even for the bhakti yogi, can be very intricate and sometimes complicated because that's the nature of this world. Krishna knows that. Therefore, he advises that you practice bhakti under the guidance of an expert devotee. Okay? Yes, you're right. Things get complicated sometimes.
Guruji, can you please explain a Mahamantra why it was not given by Krishna itself in Gita and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us?
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Satatam kirtayanto mam, always chanting my glories.
And what are the meanings of all words?
Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. My dear Lord Krishna, my dear Lord Ram, for so many lifetimes I've been serving your illusory energy. Now please engage me in your devotional service. He wants to know what is the difference between Griha Medhi and Grihastha, and how a Krishna conscious person sees wife and children in relation to Krishna. We have quite a few Krishna conscious householders here. They are showing you an example how to have Krishna in the center of your family. The Sanskrit term Griha Medhi means one who has no spiritual knowledge, has no sense control, and just has an ordinary home in which the activities are sense indulgence and trying to please your temporary body. Grihastha life means Krishna's in the center. The husband and wife cooperate as a team for achieving the ultimate goal of life. So we have examples of that here. What is the difficulty?
Doesn't that become the imitation of Krishna?
No, that is Krishna's instruction. Be a real householder. Live according to Dharma. You follow Krishna's instruction. That is wanted. And that way you become purified. And you realize we're all part of Krishna's family. It's not just my little family, but everyone is part of Krishna's family because he is the seed-giving father.
As you are telling, say, like, Grihastha life we are into, like, what is dharma and, like, what is satkarma or what are the path means? We do a lot of things every day. And more we read about Gita and other these things, so, like, how can we distinguish, like, the thing I am doing is some kind of, like, because as we come to Australia, so we have to learn the law of Australia. But how can we learn the law of this cosmic world that this is dharma or this is a good deed and this is a bad deed? But at least we can distinguish we should not do that.
We have Bhagavad Gita, we have Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the devotees to guide us and counsel us. We have spiritual master. What is the difficulty? Just like sometimes we see that amongst our serious devotees, they are thinking, maybe I should buy a big house on the other side of Melbourne, far away. But then they begin to think, if I buy the big house far away on the other side of Melbourne, it'll be very difficult for me to visit the temple. Now, better I get a place that's closer to the temple, even though it might be smaller because the temple area may be a bit more expensive, but still I will have the advantage of being closer to the association of devotees. So that's a practical example of how getting good advice will save you a lot of trouble. You get a big house far away from the association of devotees, then you'll just lament. I'm spending all my time working to pay for the house, spending all my time cleaning the house. I never have time to associate with devotees. I'm becoming more and more in mundane consciousness. So someone who's expert can point out, you will be happier the closer you are to the association of devotees. The great wealth, the real wealth, is the association of other practitioners of Krishna consciousness. These are very nice questions. It shows that you have been listening very deeply. And now you're ready for action, yes? I hope this has been a great weekend of transformation for many of you. So once again, let me remind you, let us try not to make everything too complicated, you know, trying to touch your nose this way. Swamiji, can you tell me how I get the finger like this onto the nose? Please tell me, Swamiji. And then I give an answer. Just go like this. No, no, Swamiji, I didn't mean that. What I meant was... This weekend is about the simple way of touching your finger to the nose like that. I'm not a very good person for teaching you how to... I can't even do it there. Your life is short. Your time is short. We want you to know how to make the best use of your short life and your short time so you can become Krishna conscious very quickly.
Prabhu, what if, as you said that like a person who eats flesh or doesn't touch meat, he gets a punch. Now what about the eggs? Because my question is, it's related to this. What about the eggs? Do you reckon that into non-veg or cock? It's pretty confusing some people say it's flesh or some people say it's meat. But it's pretty confusing, like,
not to be around that is not as bad as dealing with slaughtered animals, but it's not desirable. You try to find, if you're serious about spiritual life, you try to find a better occupation. Anything else? The main thing, though, you should concentrate on is chanting Hare Krishna. Yes, and then all these other things will be cleared up. Sometimes you all put the emphasis on what to give up. Swamiji, should I give up this? Should I give up that? But first emphasize chanting Hare Krishna, and then the rest of what you should do will become quite obvious and clear to you, and you'll have the strength to do those right things that you should do. So I don't want you to feel that Krishna consciousness is a huge burden and immediately you have to do so many impossible things. Oh no, I have to pay for my school fees. The only job that I can get is working in a place where there is things that are not good. What to do? Oh, I cannot give up this job. Therefore, I cannot be Krishna conscious. That is the conclusion. Now, first you start to chant Hare Krishna, and then we'll sort the other things out gradually, okay? That's fine with everyone? All day long, I've been hearing so many questions like this. Swamiji, my circumstances, they are not all good. I am living with persons who are doing bad things, or at my job, there are bad things. What to do? I ask, have you started to chant Hare Krishna? Not yet, Swamiji. You start to chant Hare Krishna, and then all these other aspects of your life will be taken care of. You'll get the vision to see what to do. You'll get the strength to do the right thing. But now, you don't have that strength. You have to take shelter of the Hare Krishna mantra and get the spiritual strength coming from Krishna. Then you can do what you have to do. So I don't want you to feel discouraged. It's very frustrating when you think, I've got to do something that's right, but I don't have the strength to do it. Isn't that frustrating? First, get the strength, and then we'll teach you what to do with the strength. Okay? Everyone likes that. It's true. Yes?
Is the quantity of chanting important or quality of chanting important? And how to keep up the quality of chanting?
Both are important. Daily practice of trying to make chanting your focus. Practice every day. And the natural sweetness of the Hare Krishna mantra will become more and more apparent to you.
Sometimes when we are on transport, we
it's not a good idea. You get automatically into stuff.
Try your best. Krishna in your heart knows when you're trying your best. Okay? No need to put yourself in anxiety. Just try your best. Take one step at a time. Okay? See, this is my point. Don't imagine that Krishna consciousness is some kind of impossible thing. It's so difficult to do. Take one step at a time, and gradually you'll be Krishna conscious. So many of you are starting out chanting, increasing one round every week. Now, if I said, tomorrow, I want all those of you who are not chanting, tomorrow you immediately chant 16 rounds, what would you say? Oh, sorry. Right? Impossible. You don't understand. We are working. We are studying. We are studying and working. We have no time. But if I say, start off chanting a little bit every week and increase a little every week, then you say, oh, that is practical. Yes, I can do that. And then so many of you have told me that once you start chanting 16 rounds a day, you realize, I do have time to do it. I find I have more time now that I'm chanting so much because my consciousness is more clear and I've turned off the TV. Anything else? So I'm glad you're thinking very deeply about these things. So it's hard for me to tear myself away from you all. But we want to have some kirtan, and then we'll return to Melbourne. I think also you have some, right, after, okay, all right. So, we're going to do some chanting. I thank you all very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.